Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. There's a little bit of a problem with some of the messages you send me, and so sometimes I may not get the whole message. We're working on that. I gotta try to figure out why this is happening. So if I haven't gotten to some of your questions, please give me another shot. Send me another message. You might have to break it into smaller pieces, just a line at a time until we can figure out what's going on here. I am sorry about that. Or give me a call. And that's really great, because then we don't have to deal with these crazy apps. 251-343-0106. And Dan, feel free to give me a call, because I can't see your whole message. Just feel free to call me back. It's okay. It's all right. And you may need to. Somebody sent me a beautiful picture, and here we go. It's from Andrew, and it was found around Grand Bay. You know, it is one of the great plants of fall, and it is stunningly beautiful. I wish everybody could see this picture that he sent me. But one of the things you could do is go around Grand Bay, and you could send me the picture of this plant, because when you see it, you're going to say, ooh, gosh, what is that? It's a really beautiful thing. One of the great flowers of coastal Alabama. And in fact, throughout all of Alabama, but there are a lot of different species. Some of them are very rare. In fact, one or two of them are endangered. They're very rare. I think this is probably not the endangered one, but I'd have to look at it from a different perspective and a little bit closer. It's an Agilinus. We're so bad about names. Talking about failing to follow the commandments of God. In 2 Genesis, if you folks will read the Bible, I wanted to say to the guy who stopped me on the side of the road yesterday, he said, do you read the Bible? I said, yeah, but I bet I read it better than you did. You can't tell me what's in the second chapter of Genesis, because the second chapter of Genesis, there's this commandment that says, okay, you go out, you got to name these things. I made them all, but you got to name them. Talking to Adam. And what have we done towards naming things? Well, we call everything Joe Billy. That's the way we name things, right? False foxgloves. False foxglove is the common name, the terrible common name we have to give to this plant, because we can't think of a better one. It's nothing false about it. It is just an absolutely beautiful flower. You know, I'm going to have to sit down and make up a name for this flower. You should too. And then we got to get everybody to agree on it, so we just got to say it enough out loud. That's how it works. That's how common names work. False foxglove, it's Agilinus. Beautiful. There are many different kinds that will be pinkish or purplish or sometimes all white. You can stick your little pinky in them into the throat like other foxgloves, but it is a beautiful thing. They're blooming everywhere now. They are hemiparasitic, as the scientists like to say, on the roots of grasses. Wow. That means they partially get their energy from parasitizing grasses. That's okay. Actually, it's fine. Don't hold it against the plant. It's a beautiful plant. It actually makes it a little bit rarer that it actually needs these grasses to grow on, because we've done such a terrible job of preserving our grasses. But where there's still some great grasses left, like in Grand Bay Savannah, you'll see Agilinus. It's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. David Hubble is good enough to call us and talk to us about pepper jelly. David's got lots of things he could talk to us about. His Casa Banana is looking really good. It's got incredibly beautiful flowers on it now. His Melaton is doing really well and beginning to flower. But we're picking on him about pepper jellies this morning. How are you doing, David?
Pretty good. How are you, Bill? I'm sorry about your dog.
I'm good. Yeah, well, I'm even sorrier about this longleaf parcel, though I am sorry about the dog, too. Yeah. Hey, so tell me, Have you you've made some pepper jellies before, haven't you?
Yes, made 35 jars last weekend. In fact,
that's right. So, any advice for Dan on making pepper jellies?
Well, he said so. He sounds like he burned it, is what it sounds like. So, I'm not sure. First of all, he could look at some recipes on the internet from like the jar manufacturing companies, like Ball.
Yep.
Or Kerr. They might have some good guidelines, but basically what you want to do, and basically what I do, is to get about a cup and a half of your peppers that you chop up in any combination. You don't want them all hot because you'll have a excessively hot jelly.
Yeah.
But to that cup and a half, you're going to have to add an acid because peppers themselves don't have enough sugar for preservation.
Right.
Through vacuum sealing. So you need about a cup and a half of vinegar. And what I do is I'll chop those the peppers up first, measure them out exactly, put them in my blender, and then I'll add my cup and a half of vinegar to it, and I'll blend that for about 10 seconds. Then I'll put it in my pot, and then the other component that you need is, or two more, is going to be sugar. And for that, like I said, since it's a lower sugar vegetable fruit, you really need to add a little bit more. So my recipe calls for about 6.5 cups for those two portions that I've already given you. Mm-hmm. So you mix all that together, and depending on, I should take a step back, depending on the pectin you're using is depending on when you add the sugar. So I usually add the Certo liquefied pectin. And so to do that, you add your sugar to your vinegar mash first, bring it to boil, and then boil it till you can't stir it down anymore. And then after that, you add your take it off for 10 minutes, and then after 10 minutes, skim the scum off the top and then add the pectin to it.
Yeah. So let me ask you, since Dan has a history of burning his pepper jelly,
okay.
Let me ask you, and this is for my reference too, because I'd have a bad tendency to burn things. Do you would it help to have a double boiler, or do you think that's just making too much of it? You just think you just got to stir it?
You just got to stir it. You just got to sit there with it. Now, what happens, and I think it's happened to some of my family members when they made it too, is that it takes a while for that, I'm calling it a mash, for that to, yeah, to really start boiling. And so it may seem like you're sitting there about 10 minutes for those proportions I gave you and nothing's happening. Then all of a sudden you start to see a little bubble, and then it just kind of gets violent. So you, yeah, kind of really have to be there and stir it occasionally, watch it, kind of like making a roux, but, you know, not.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what it sounds like, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know whether, I mean, you could probably try that. I've never tried it. It's just, I've been able to just, like I said, pay attention to it. And, of course, the other thing he needs to know, too, is he's got to have some jars that he's prepared with, you know, boiled. And I often use slight bleach solution to clean them ahead of time. And then you prepare them, get them above 212 Fahrenheit, and then you can them in there, and afterwards you seal it, and you wipe the lids, put your lid on top, close it, and then return it to the water to process for 10 minutes.
Yeah. So here's a thought, and so, you know, several things that you remind me of, and it's that if you use a pretty hot pepper, your pepper jelly is going to be pretty hot, and you may have to consume a lot of jars yourself because
right,
nobody else will eat it. But one of the things I've thought about, and plus the fact that you have to add a lot of sugar, but, you know, one of the things I've thought about, and I'm not an expert jelly maker, but I've thought about, you know, you got pears coming in, particularly some of these hard pears, and you got your peppers coming in. And would it be good, do you think, to mix, say, like pears and peppers and make a pear pepper jelly?
You could.
Yeah. That, but, so
There's recipes
out there. I'm throwing this out there because I know I'm not going to make it. But, man, somebody with some of these hard pears and lots of peppers on their hands, that would be a great way to sort of use them. And you would get some consistency and some of that great pepper flavor without making it killer hot because you being able to mix the two of them. There are a lot of ajis that are milder that you can mix with that I think would also be very, very good. We're going to come back. David, I'd like to talk to you about your website real briefly if you can hold on. Can you?
Sugar Magnolia, blossoms blooming. That's all that you have, don't care.
So let me be down by the river.
We should have to come up soon for care.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. We got lots of things going on. David Hubble was kind enough to come on this morning. We talked about pepper jelly. And David, tell us, just David's got some great things going on in his garden. Those are beautiful flowers and fruits. Was that your Casa Banana that was you had the flower and the fruit of picture of?
Right. The Casa Bananas I've been keeping you up to speed on. I planted that about I think maybe early June, and it seemed like it kind of took a little while, but it's taken off and it's gone up high in that mimosa tree I've got. And I've been waiting to and looking for blooms in it. And this past week, I just noticed way up top, where it's going to be hard for me to get to it, I got two or three blooms showing.
Yeah, so, you know, and you'll walk under it one day in December and it'll fall on your head.
Well, I got shed underneath it, so I'm going to have to put some cushion to catch it.
That's right. You know, there are some fruits that they grow in the tropics, and these are Casa Banana is one of these really big fruited plants from the tropics. And one of the hazards I find in the Philippines when I was there is that a lot of these fruits actually it's like some of the jackfruits, and what's that really smelly one? I'll think of it in just a minute. They actually kill people. They've actually been known to kill people because when they fall from these great heights and just drop on people's heads. So, but you know, your shed can take it. Your shed can handle it. David has a great website, folks, and David does incredible work at keeping alive Gulf Coast heritage vegetables and experimenting with them and finding out what works. Someone was asking earlier about a musical selection that we play, thanks to David. It's Gagutsa. What's the name of that Gagutsa piece, David?
Oh, about Louis Prima's.
Yeah, my Gagutsa, which is spelled C-U-Z-Z-A. And pronounced in that, I guess, Sicilian or whichever dialect it is that's gotten to be very big around New Orleans, we usually pronounce it Gagutsa, as if it's two G's, sort of. And Kukutsa, Gagutsa. That's what that song's about, it's a really cool song. But, David, what's your website?
It's through Facebook. I've got a Melitol Man of Mobile page for most of the vegetable growing things.
Yeah.
And then I've got a Hubble's Hearth LLC for my jelly and cookie stuff I do.
That's great. And so they're really great sites for those of you who are interested in Gulf Coast vegetables and for Gulf Coast cooking. And David is a regular listener and helps us out a lot. It's always good to hear from you, David.
I enjoy being able to talk to you about it.
Yeah. Keep us posted on the Melitol and the
Casa Banana.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try to call you back in a couple of weeks. Hopefully I'll have some great news on harvesting.
All right. Great.
All right.
Thank you. Cade, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. I got some questions. I'm trying to figure out how to make some jelly palm wine. They're all over Mobile right now, and the squirrels won't even eat them. There's so many of them.
Yeah, that's right.
I've looked all over the internet, and I want to see if you had any recommendations.
Yeah, so the best I could do is tell you about my last attempt at wine when I was 14 years old, which my mother found in the bottom drawer of the cabinet in my room, which was not a pleasant experience either in drinking it or in having my mother find it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not an expert on winemaking, but those who are should call in. Now, that's an interesting thought, to make a jelly palm wine. Jelly palm, of course, makes a great jelly. It's a great dessert in and of itself. Have you heard of people making jelly palm wine?
Oh, well, I mean, not until I got on the internet started looking. But I can't find recipe that's step-by-step. That's my problem.
Yeah. So here we go again. I need help, folks. If anybody has any advice on making a jelly palm, we give us a call. Let us know. The jelly palms are out there. It is one of the great delicacies of Mobile. It's one of the great fruits of Mobile. They ripen. You don't get to talk about this in Montgomery. You don't talk about it in Birmingham. You don't talk about it. It's not this southern-wide experience. It's a Gulf Coast experience, and we get tons of jelly palm fruits. And I love the taste of jelly palm fruits. It's incredibly complex, but has a lot of. But it's fruity. It's mangy. It's peachy. Has a little bit of tartness, depending on the variety, but it is always delicious. Never had a bad one. And some of the drier, tartar ones might make a really great wine. If those of you who have experience with wine, let us know. We'll keep you posted. Yeah. All right, Dan's got a wine tip. Dan, I'm listening. What's up?
But I actually have experience with wine.
Yeah.
You there?
Yeah, we're listening.
Okay.
Yeah.
The big thing with your fruit wines, which is what, you know, the jelly palm, you're going to want to treat it like, is wine has these inherent characteristics that all come from the grape. Grapes are covered with their own natural yeast. They have the proper amount of sugar and tannins in them to give that wine flavor. And you don't really get a lot of those aspects out of other fruit, any other fruit wine, even, you know, be it a blueberry or any other kind of berries even. They don't have enough tannins to give the proper mouthfeel. So he's going to want to, you know, I don't have a step-by-step recipe for jelly palm. But I could tell him if he would look up a recipe for like a plum wine, or something to that effect, like a plum wine, maybe even like a blueberry, probably closer to plum wine though. If he follows that recipe pretty close, the jelly palm will turn out probably about as well as he'll get it to turn out without having a step-by-step recipe. The other tip I would give him is there's actually a wine supply distributor in Mobile on Moffett Road, kind of heading out towards Sims over by Pathway Church, is a guy called the Winesmith. And he's really good at what he does. He knows his stuff. You can get any supplies you need from him. He's even got step-by-step recipes for several kinds of wine. I don't know about jelly palm, but the guy's really experienced. I wouldn't be surprised if he hadn't seen it or made it before. So that's one resource I would reach out to. That's about, I don't know, I guess all I could really offer as far as that goes. The main thing is he's going to want to look at proper yeast. You're going to want probably a champagne yeast for most fruit wine. The proper balance of pectin and tannin. And then whenever you want to look at your specific gravity to figure out how, you know, what kind of alcohol content you want, that's going to determine how much sugar you need to add. A lot of sugar in it, I know, but you probably
right.
want to add a little bit more. So there's a lot that goes into it, man. But you got to kind of start somewhere, and I think a plum wine recipe and talking to the winesmith dude over on Moffitt is going to be where he wants to start.
Yeah, I love that comparison to plum wine, because actually there's some great plum wines, and they can be difficult to make well, but when they're good, there are some really fine plum wines out there, some really bad ones, but there's some really great ones. And that's an old Asian tradition, making great plum wines. So that's interesting. Hey, Dan, did you have some other questions? You might want to hold on.
Yes, sir.
So we can follow up on that. Yeah, and we're going to be back very soon. Holly, hold on. We'll talk about your avocado tree as well.
There is no sickness, toil, danger in that fair land to which I go. I'm going home to see my mother. I'm going home no more to roam. I'm just going over Jordan. I'm just going.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, it's kind of nice when I don't have to do all the work on the show. So, Dan, David Hubble called in earlier and did a lot of work for me in terms of helping us with the jellies. And Dan called back to help Cade with making a wine. And Larry, you have some thoughts on winemaking too, Larry? Yeah, Cade, what's up? I'm sorry. Dan or Cade am I talking to? Yeah, Larry, I'm listening. What's up?
Yeah, years ago I was teaching down in South America, in Ecuador to be exact, and I was teaching 10th grade biology, and I took Galapagos Islands. We were 15 days out there, and on one of the islands, the lady there, she made wine. She made orange wine out of oranges. Oh, it was delicious. Anyway, but she taught me how she made it. All she does is she takes, you take a gallon jug, fill it up with whatever fruit you want, you know, and then fill it up with, put sugar in it until, you keep shaking. You fill up all the spaces between all the fruit, and then seal it up, make sure it's airtight, you know, no air, the light can get into it. Put a date on it and put it in the back of your closet where it's dark, and put it in there for at least 3 months. 6 months is better. And then you take it out, strain it, and then heat it till it just begins to bubble, and then take it off and then let it cool off and drink it. Once it gets cold, it's delicious. I've done oranges. All types of grapes. I've done scuppernons and some fruits down in South America that we don't get here, and they're all good. If you like your wine a little spicy, a little bit of anise, into it, and it's delicious.
Well, there it is. You know, yeah. I did something similar. I got the back of the closet part right when I was a kid. Uh-huh. I'm not sure I got the rest of it right, but
I don't make it often, but I'll make it every once in a while when I think about it. It's
right.
Delicious.
Yeah, so some great stories about wines put in the back of the closet and then being forgotten about and exploding. That's one of the things. Don't put it in with your good clothes.
No, I haven't had that happen yet.
But Yeah. So there are some great ways of making wines across the globe. They don't, as Dan points out. They may not have the tannins. They may not have a lot of the mouthfeel of grapes. They often require some kind of yeast to keep it, some dominant yeast to keep it from getting too excessively funky. There's a lot of cool. There's a lot of cool wines out there. Yeah,
there are. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me. Thanks. It's great to hear. And thank you, Larry. Patrick, I'm listening. What's up?
Patrick, go.
Patrick, you there?
You what?
There.
Can you hear me, Patrick?
Yeah, I'm just sitting here listening.
He was
talking earlier about this jelly palm wine.
Yep.
And I went online and I Googled it, and there's a recipe for 3 gallons of Butch's or somebody's jelly palm wine on there. And it
all the
ingredients and how to go about it.
All right, good. Well, Cade will look into that too. I will pass that along to Cade. This is great information from a lot of folks. Hey, is Dan still on? Dan was going to hold on. Dan, feel free to call back. I'm sorry we lost you there. If we need to, we'll come back. Holly, you have been patient. Are you still there?
Thank you.
All right. So tell me what's up.
I have an avocado tree that has got a fungus or something on it. It just developed about a week and a half ago. And I wanted to know what to put on it.
It's an avocado tree, you said, correct? Have you got this growing in a pot?
It's in a pot.
Yeah. And, what's your long-term vision for this avocado tree?
Well, I eventually wanted to plant it. It has gotten about 2.5 foot tall, and it was doing really well. It was on my porch in full sun, and I was going to plant it later on, but I haven't looked up how when was a good time to plant it.
Yeah, well, so let me, just before we get too far into this, can I tell you something about avocado trees?
Yeah.
They don't survive the winters here in Mobile or on the Upper Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. They get killed back. I have seen some that survive a few mild winters, but never long enough to really produce any fruit. Uh-huh. So before you put too much into this avocado, I feel like I need to tell you that.
Okay. My husband just built me a greenhouse, and I was going to put it in there for the winter. I was going to ask you about that, too, if it would be okay.
Yeah, certainly you could put it in the greenhouse. Of course, avocados get really big. I mean, they can get to be the size of a small live oak. I mean, they kind of have the same shape. They're pretty big. So it's hard to grow them in a greenhouse long term, but you can try that for a little while and see if that works. Just don't get too... Just a word of warning before you invest too much in it. Now, the leaf diseases. You know, I'm not sure which leaf disease it is. We would have to, there could be a lot of them. Generally, avocados don't have terrible leaf diseases. Generally, it's not the leaf diseases that kill them. It's usually a root rot or cold. One of those two things. Yeah, no. Well, if it's a leaf disease, it's not because it got overwatered. I'm not sure how serious it is. You might send me a picture. Here's the problem though. With almost all leaf diseases, you can really do preventatives, but once it has a disease, it's really hard to control that disease. So almost all of our fungicides for things like avocados and other things are designed to prevent leaf diseases, But once those diseases get a start and are in the system of the plant, or in the veins of the plant, as it were, it's very hard to treat them with most of our fungicides. I would not use a really toxic fungicide. I might use a copper-based fungicide, which I think you mentioned. But be careful, because because too much of that copper-based fungicide could also kill the plant or burn the leaves. So you want to be careful about it. Personally, here's what I would do. I wouldn't worry about the leaf disease. I don't think it's not going to die from a leaf disease, I'm pretty sure. Probably not even going to have a lot of trouble with that leaf disease, even though you might get a little bit of it. The big problem you got to figure out is, how do you grow a really big tree that doesn't like wet soils and can't stand temperatures below about 28 degrees in a place like Mobile?
Yes.
That's the big one.
Okay. Well, I'll just keep an eye on it then, and just see what I can do and see how it's going to turn out.
Yeah. And listen, you call me back and you tell me I didn't know what I was talking about, because sometimes I don't. But
okay. Well, I'd like to get your number where I could send you a picture of it.
Yes, ma'am. All you got to do is to get me a picture. All you got to do is send a number to this same number you called. Just take that picture and send it. Just send it, message it, text message it to the same number you called, 343-0106, and I'll get that picture.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You have a good Sunday afternoon.
You too. Thank you. Hey, Dan. Sorry about that.
So, no, it's fine. I wasn't sure if you wanted me to hold over or not.
Yeah, a little confusing. So you had some other questions.
Well, yeah, I was asking. I've got some stuff I seeded like earlier last week. You know, I got collards, red giant mustards. let's see. And one more thing that I cannot think of. Oh, red Russian kale.
Yeah.
Parsley, nasturtiums, calendulas, and marigolds. I wanted to know what your thoughts were on those. And I also planted some broccoli, some little like small heading broccoli, kind of like that, from what I understand, similar to that Brazilian one you always recommend that I never remember the name of.
Yeah,
and,
like
also Parasikamba. some giant mustard, not red giant, but another type of mustard that I planted from a seedling.
All those are great, Dan. And let me just say that you probably won't get fruit, you won't get flower heads on the broccoli before Christmas, because one of the problems is that actually we can deal with the temperatures, but what we can't deal with is the fact that days are getting shorter.
Right.
And as those days get shorter, the plants slow down and they don't produce flowering heads and et cetera, et cetera. However, You're going to be in a great place come January as the days get longer, and you'll see them. I mean, it's incredible. You'll see them just say, oh man, the days are getting longer, I'm going to start growing it. And I'm talking about the week after Christmas. The weather's right, you'll get a lot of growth. And so by the end of January, February, but you will have to cover some of those plants. And I don't know if I'm going to have time to get into all of the details. The kale, you don't got to worry about it all. I mean, there is never a freeze in Mobile that I think will damage that kale. The collards, no problem whatsoever. They're going to be slow, but no problem. The broccoli at about 26 to 27 degrees, you just need to put a blanket over it. The same goes for your mustards. They can burn up pretty bad, particularly some of the bigger leaf forms, at about 25 degrees. So put a little blanket over them. If you can keep the blanket from touching the leaves, that helps too. And now I got to take a break, Dan. But if you'll hold on, I'll come back and we'll talk about your nasturtiums and calendulas and probably several other things that I forgot to mention. So we'll be back.
If it keeps on when the levee breaks.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. We have a show that has moved very fast. Listen, I want to come back to a subject, and Dan will allow me to do this because it was a great question. We talked about the loss of this longleaf forest earlier in the show that is just tearing me apart. It's killing me. It should kill you too, because it is your heritage. It is your grandchildren's heritage. And, you know, how long will it be before that forest returns? It will be many generations. And you know, that's a sad thing for your children. That's a sad thing for your grandchildren. That's a sad thing for your great-grandchildren. If, and in some cases, it will never return. But listen, here's the great thing. With this longleaf forest, you could have managed it for incredible timber. Beautiful timber, the best timber ever produced in North America from this longleaf forest. You could have produced this incredible timber and still maintained all of the rest of the stuff. But you can't do it when you cut it back to the ground. Everything back to the ground. The way you manage a longleaf forest is you go through, you thin that forest. If you do it smart, you can thin it. You could thin it every 2 or 3 years for the rest of your life. That's the way you do it. You don't come in and say, I don't care. I'm just going to obliterate this forest. I don't want to have to think about it. That's what happened here. It's not important. That's what happened here. The person who did that cutting knew better than to do this. He had heard that there were better ways of doing it. Let's talk. Next week, if you want to call me, we'll talk a little bit about how to manage longleaf forest in South Alabama so that we get the incredible wildlife, so that we get quail, so that we get, God knows we don't need more deer, but we get deer, we get turkey, we get the red-cockaded woodpeckers, we get these orchids spread over areas, we get all of these things along with great timber. We can do all that with longleaf. It's really easy. You just got to care about the place. You just got to say, man, if God made this, he didn't want me to wreck it. That's all you got to say. That's all you got to wake up in the morning and say. And then you'll figure out how to do it. But you could talk to us. We'll talk about it. We love longleaf management. We've got a lot of great questions. Dan, I want to come back to some of your flowers. You still there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Nasturtiums. So nasturtiums, put them in pots. You can put them in the ground in a really protected place. I did that last winter, and they actually survived the winter, but it was a very mild winter for the most part. So I would say put your nasturtiums in containers. They do great in containers. And then you can keep pumping them up in size. And then in spring, you're going to have these containers that are overflowing with nasturtiums. And all you got to do is walk out on the porch and just pick these incredible flowers and put them in salads. People are so impressed. Man, they think you're so good. They think they don't forget the fact that you burn your jelly. If you've got these incredible nasturtium flowers that you put on the salads, they're incredible. So do that. The calendulas, it's a little late, but give it a shot anyway. I think they're going to be fine. I would put them in containers. They probably would do okay in the ground. They're very cold hardy. But I would at this point put them in containers. Dan, were you going to grow carrots?
I had considered it. I've got seeds. I know it's kind of late.
I don't think it's too late. I think it's a great time to do it. Go ahead and sow those carrots, and put some screen on the top of them. I've just got several techniques, but here's what I would do: when you sow them, put it in a little area and put window screen on it. Okay, and keep them moist, and that keeps some of the bugs from getting on them. So you get those little things, and then you'll have to thin them. But I don't think it's too late for carrots at all. Let me also say, Dan, if you don't mind, to folks, because we're running out of time, that this is a great time. If you've got some big collard plants, big broccoli plants that are 18 inches tall, this is a prime time to put them out. Don't hesitate. Go ahead and put them in the ground. They're really great. You will, if you could find some big plants at those places where you go to find big plants, wherever that is, if you can find some nice-sized plants, you'll probably get some broccoli before Christmas. So it's still a great time for planting those things. Dan, I think it's a great time for you to plant them. You may not see a lot of harvest until after December 25th, but you'll get some, and it's good. Did I miss anything, Dan?
No, sir. That answers pretty much all my questions. I appreciate you for doing that for me. If you want, I can call back next week. If maybe Cade wants to listen, I can kind of sort of give a rough rundown of kind of the winemaking process. There's a couple different ways to do it if you're interested in talking about that next week, maybe.
Let's do that. Let's come back and let's do that. It was a popular discussion today, so let's come back to those wines next week, Dan. Thank you so much.
All right, Mr. Bill, nice talking to you. I appreciate it, as always.
All right, good to hear from you. Charlie, have we got any other callers? So we got a few things I need to wrap up. Let's see. Johnny reminds me that his banana tree fell over, and we had some discussion about this. You know, if you take those banana fruits, his tree fell over, his trunk, if you will, take those fruits, just sit them in a warm place. They will go ahead and ripen. Next week, we're going to have to talk about it because we're going to get a cold spell. We're going to get a pretty good cold spell in a couple of weeks. It's not going to be cold enough, I think, to freeze things, but it will slow down those bananas, and we're going to have to think about them carefully. So if you want to call back next week and ask me about bananas, it'll be perfect timing. You will be right on the nose with the timing of that question. We also want to talk about longleaf management next week. Let's do that. Hey, folks, this is our place. This is our place. And it's one of the most important places in the world. It's not just special to you. It's special to the world. Let's think about it. Let's think about this wonderful place. Think about it where you are. That's what this show's about every Sunday morning. Hey, we'll be back next week. Save your questions. Give us a call. That plum tree, those flowers don't mean you're going to get plums. I'm sorry. But you can call me next week. We'll talk about it. Hey, good to hear from everybody. Talk to you next week.